Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast Top Threat Predictions for IoT and Protecting the Connected. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with today's speaker, Michael Chaffee from Intel Security. Today's schedule consists of about 45 minutes of presentation, leaving about 15 minutes at the end of the hour for audience Q&A. Before we begin, let's run down some important features of your viewing console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate in today's event. You can simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit questions at any time during the presentation. We encourage you to do so early and often while you're looking at the material and the question is fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A, and if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you could submit those too, and one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the eCast. Our speaker today is Michael Chaffee, Global Director of Embedded Security Sales Engineering at Intel. He is responsible for the management of the worldwide technical sales team within Intel Security's Embedded Sales Organization. Michael has been involved in information security since the late 90s, and his initial security focus was around legacy antivirus techniques, moving into the utilization of whitelisting as an additive level of security in the early 2000s. Today, in addition to a focus in core IT security, both cloud and on-premise, he is focused on security design principles for IoT security and the Internet of Things. Prior to Intel, he was a practice manager for an IBM Global Services partner specializing in monitoring, identity, and access management. Welcome, Michael. The floor is yours.
Thanks very much, Kurt. I appreciate that introduction. And thank you very much for the audience that has taken time out of their day to join us here on this eCast. And hopefully the next 45 minutes will be a productive and enlightening time for you. So with that, let's go ahead and just jump in. I want to first begin talking about the digital world that we live in today. And there's really no doubt that this digital world that we live in is fundamentally shifting. The user mobility and the growth of data and devices and the cloud and consumerization of all of these devices are really driving growth and advances and really changing the way that our business, your business and my business, are both experiencing these shifts with the social experiences and the way that they're delivered and consumed. You know, many organizations are moving to embrace this digital business model, as we put it, and utilizing various different channels to market that are overtaking really traditional avenues have been used in the past. And it's really crucial that organizations continue to be very competitive. But at the same time, we need to be managing risk and managing acceptable levels of risk. I think that's really key. You know, I feel as security professionals, many of you on this call today, you know, sometimes we get just so bogged down with heads down and fighting the bad guys, if you will. But you know, we really begin to forget why we're in this business in the first place. And I think that, at least to me, it's helping to manage that risk and to build a more resilient and really a more resilient business and ensuring business continuity. And what I want to cover today really outlines not only Intel's strategy, but more Intel Security's strategy, which is it's a business unit within Intel. It really talks about delivering both that optimal security that we talked about earlier and the business outcomes, and to make sure that organizations across the globe can really innovate and grow with confidence in this digital world that we live in. And to do this, it really means we need to transform and shift our current approaches to security. So I hope that over the next 40 to 45 minutes or so that we're going to take a look at some of those challenges and we'll be seeing and what we are seeing in the security space today. Before I go any further, I really want to show and try to bring this and make it a little bit more relative for you. You're probably sitting at a desk right now or a conference room, I would imagine, and if you just do me a favor and take inventory of the devices that are in sight right now, some of those devices that are IP-enabled. I would venture a guess that at a minimum two devices are sitting on your desk right now, the smartphone sitting to your right or left and the laptop or desktop sitting in front of you. That's two distinct IP addresses that are within access to you or your employer's network. Do you know that they're secure? Can you say with confidence that those devices are secure? If you're in a conference room right now, have a look at that conference phone that you're speaking on or listening to me on right now. Is it secure? I think Polycom at one point a few years ago thought that their devices were secure until there was a security incident a few years ago where white hat hackers, right, those are the good guys, were able to control a device and eavesdrop on boardroom conversations. And luckily that was brought to Polycom's attention, but nonetheless, do you think the employer knows that those devices are of the conferencing system are secure? Do you think your organization knows the patch level or if they need updates? So let's try to bring that same thought a little bit closer to home. I'm sure most of us on the call today have some a smart TV in the home. Do you know the operating system that TV is running? Do you know the patch level? Do you know if it's been updated? Probably it's the weakest link in your security chain at your home. And these are some examples of the digital world and the shifts that we're dealing with today, because devices and users, they're dispersed, and cloud is really connecting all of us to some degree. Office 365, for instance, Google Docs, there's security implications that for folks that bring their own devices to work. So you can see how there's a huge shift in this digital world, and what we're doing impacts the organizational security posture. So let's go ahead and dive in and find out a little bit more. The malware count in the wild today is in the millions, and a few years ago when I started with Intel, the count was in the tens of thousands. And me and my coworkers thought, wow, that's a lot of malware. And now there's five pieces of new malware every second. So basically in the time that it took me to explain this topic to you, there's been about 100 new pieces of malware added to the malware zoo, as we like to call it. So it really is difficult, and it's hard to keep up. And it really does make the job of a security professional that much harder. All these dispersed and disparate systems that I'm talking about, they make it very difficult to keep up with threats. It becomes a very difficult job, and it's really one that impacts, I would say, all of us on this call today. Battling with security incidents and breaches, it's actually very costly, not only for dollars and cents for potential data leakage or loss, but also, and I would say, the more indirect, intangible cost, which is brand recognition. The constant patching it's difficult. The constant updating is difficult. I would actually go so far as to say that the corporate IT admins probably have it a little easier having to worry about devices that are nearly always connected and always on desktops, laptops, and having to manage those versus an OT operator where kiosks outside the network sitting in a mall or an airport are connected only some of the time at best. And it seems that becoming and managing those devices is becoming more and more difficult. And I think that every week I'm starting to see more and more incidents. And I'm sure you've all heard about the most recent, at least the one that's recent in my mind, is the Panama Papers. And people's lives were impacted on both sides of this data leak. The law firm that was involved here actually claims that the hack was initiated on an email server. So persistent threats and weakening perimeters they should be the mindset of all security professionals today. So with that, let's go ahead and jump in to talk about some of the threat predictions that I had mentioned earlier. A lot of folks listening right now, most likely, have some wearable on them at this point in time, probably something similar to a Fitbit. There's probably others I don't know. I can't think of any other devices that are like that, but that's the one that comes to mind. It's got a catchy name. You might think, well, what's the draw for an attacker to want to target my Fitbit? Well, there's no PII, or personally identifiable information, right? Is there? These devices use a technology called Bluetooth LE, or low energy. This is a protocol that's been used for quite some time now. It's quite a few years old. But it also has been known to have some vulnerabilities in the past. And it's not necessarily the data that's on the wearable in this instant that's attractive to the attackers. It's actually the connection on the other side of that device. So, for instance, you know that on your Fitbit, it connects to your phone. It knows where you are based on the GPS location of your phone. So what if an attacker was able to exploit a vulnerability in Bluetooth Low Energy to get into the GPS locations of this device and get a historical data of where you were? If you received an email targeted to you, spear phishing attack, if you will, if you received an email that said, hey, you dropped this, I noticed you were at the coffee shop, let me know if this is yours. If you saw that and you could, and it's made relative to you, there's a much greater chance that you're going to open that email, and there could be a malformed image attachment there, which means, boom, there you go. That's how the chain starts. So it's not necessarily that the devices themselves are the target of the attack. It's the underlying capability of the device to connect to a smartphone or even a cloud repository that houses a heck of a lot more data than the device itself. So it's more information than just about your steps and calories. There's a lot more personally identifiable information that's there on the back end device. And that's what attackers are really wanting to see. And that's why the attack surface is expanding when we talk about wearables. The next area of concern for us at Intel is around automobiles. And we definitely are of the mindset that attacks on automobiles will be rapidly expanding over the course of the next 12 to 24 months. Cars are really no different. You can see on screen here there's a plethora of systems that make up and comprise the operation of a vehicle. Cars need defense in-depth strategies as well. Think of the risks around driverless autonomous cars. If these systems could be or were hacked, what would make up an autonomous car then? That's actually one of the worries of why we don't see many autonomous cars on the road yet. There still needs to be that level of driver enablement to take over if needed. According to a document that I was reading on Business Insider, the Connected Car Report, 12% of cars will be connected by the end of year this year, 12%. By the end of 2020, 220 million cars will be connected. People want internet in their cars. They want to be able to surf. They want to be able to get traffic info, social media, various warning systems about construction or maybe warnings of about the vehicle themselves. And these types of features are what could put people at risk if they're really not properly employed with security top of mind. The types of systems that you see on screen here, they take a different approach to securing than a typical corporate IT or OT approach. Cars require secure boot, trusted authentication, more tamper protection, authentication systems, encryption of data both at rest and potentially moving as well. So most of the vehicles today on the road, they lack these features. And so internet-enabling vehicles really is worrisome in my mind. Actually, in August of last year in 2015, you probably recall that attackers took remote control of a Jeep SUV. They actually did this via the infotainment system. Luckily, the attack was, again, controlled. It was a white hat hacker, if you will, versus those that are on the ones that want to do harm. But it really fundamentally changed the way that Jeep approached over-the-air updates. The only brand or manufacturer that I know of today that still delivers over-the-air updates and continues to do it is Tesla, and they too even had a vulnerability that was highlighted at DEF CON 23. So automobiles have, they've got a lot of different systems, and there's nearly all kinds of aspects of the car that could be hacked. There's millions of lines of code in each of the systems in the cars, and people like you and I are the ones that are writing this code, and code is not infallible. There are definite zero days in pretty much every device that is out there today. And so that's the big risk for us, is that what could happen at the other end of a zero day if a vulnerability is found in a car like that. The next area of concern is around critical infrastructure. And we at Intel commonly will conduct surveys just to kind of get a brief overview of what's happening based on our customers and what they're seeing. And we recently did one of these for critical infrastructure representatives that stated that 70% think that attacks are escalating in or around their organization targeted at them. Nearly half of that same group mentioned thought that an attack will take down a system that risks a human life in the next 3 years. Now, if the previous discussion around autos didn't scare you, then that should. So these recent attacks, these attackers are focusing on disruption. And when attackers focus on disruption, it typically means historically that these are nation-state attackers. Typically, cyber thieves will attack to profit or make money. They'll attack for more rich environments for simply profiting. But cyber thieves will help out to get access or sell access to nation states into devices that have critical infrastructure associated with them. So they're both nation state and cyber thieves are still involved here and should be, we should definitely still be concerned around attacks such as these on critical infrastructure. And I think one of the biggest ways in which we could thwart efforts from nation states and cyber attackers is through sharing threat intelligence. It really becomes very critical and crucial for us as Intel Security to share information, but also at the governmental level. The president just recently placed a government focus on sharing cyber intelligence more readily across government agencies. You might think that the FBI and the CIA and the the security service, they share information, and it's not necessarily true. There's an executive order actually to promote more sharing in both the public and the private sector. So we have really begun to identify that sharing cyber intelligence is critical. We've actually begun to build that into our products and have that at the forefront of our minds when we're talking about security. Intel has created a technology called DXL, or Data Exchange Layer. This is an architecture that it's built on an open standard, and it allows for information to be shared across platforms in a publish and subscribe manner. And the products that we use to share this information happens in real time, and it's built on an open standard, which means that other vendors can take part in this. So we've actually got a number of vendors that are taking part in this DXL tool set today. I'll talk more about those in a moment. But by moving towards a standard, Intel is actually able to help improve the enterprise risk posture of organizations across the globe. Standards are important. It's hard to have security without standards. And this year alone, actually, the threat intelligence community, they're going to adopt the STIX and TACSI standard for threat intelligence sharing. And we've actually got some tools of ours that incorporate STIX and TACSI as well to allow data around indicators of compromise or IOCs to be shared that much more quickly and easily going forward. So let's go ahead and jump into a 5-year look ahead from an Intel security vantage point. Cybersecurity thieves simply want money. They want your money, and your data and my data is at risk. And as long as there's a value to our digital assets, there's going to continue to be cybercrime. Typically, as I mentioned before, nation states want to disrupt and do harm. So regardless of who is doing the attacking, every one of us is at risk. We have some device at some point is at risk. The number of IoT devices is actually increasing year over year exponentially, and these devices have vulnerabilities and weaknesses built in. These are devices that were designed not necessarily for internet connection, but definitely make use of a connection. And attackers will continue to breach and weaken the perimeter. And the cloud is a big part of that. The cloud is very attractive to attackers because it offers them a one-stop shop, if you will, that once they get into that cloud environment, that they can move laterally, or east and west, as I like to call it, you know, once those attackers get in. And cyber criminals know it, and nation states know it too, that the cyber offenses and the cyber defenses will be a factor of superpowers across the globe going forward. In the 50s, it was he who had the most nuclear warheads was the biggest superpower. But now, going forward, a bigger factor, I think, is cyber offense and defense is going to be a factor in determining superpowers going forward. So that attack surface is actually broadening with each and every device that comes online. So let's have a little bit closer look at how this attack surface is evolving. So if you've kept up with some of our threat predictions in the past, you'd notice that really our earlier predictions on growth of devices was actually wrong. We were actually way too conservative. We could not have envisioned that the ease and the cost of developing devices, connectable devices, that is dropping so fast that more and more devices are entering the market. And not only do these devices have potential weaknesses that expose themselves to attackers, but they also expose the systems that they connect to and potentially the information that they manage to those same attackers. And these devices will be designed to remain in operation for years. That Fitbit that's on your wrist right now, they're not providing updates to it. It's just that once that device dies or once the battery dies, you probably will simply replace it. But for the couple of years or 3 years that it is on your wrist, there's very little updates that can occur to it. And in the home, the smartphones and tablets that are on our dining room tables and coffee tables have become a pivotal part of that IoT ecosystem. The phones and tablets are really collection points for those wearables, as I mentioned before. They're used to configure and control smart televisions. I know that I use mine to operate lights and manage thermostats, open door locks on the front door. There's even some that will connect over to appliances and potentially even start cars. These are all connected to a cloud back-end as well. And these phones and tablets and devices have vulnerabilities, and they've typically not been targeted because there really hasn't been a financial motivation for attackers to do so. But with the connected home, that really begins to change things, and that really moves them towards attacking those types of devices to get to that connected home. Think about the modem in your home today that's on right now. It is, number one, it's always on. Mine comes with a battery backup, so even when the power's out, it's still on. It's blindly sending packets back and forth. You know, that literally enables your home to be the next bot of a botnet. And over the next 5 years, these connected home networks are going to be one of the more simple ways to hack into our lives as consumers of this technology, or even potentially, because of that user disparity that we talked about earlier, into our employer's resources. So it really is much of what we do and how we operate and what we connect to will be driven by the phone in our pocket and the tablet in our bag and the watch on our wrist. These devices are always going to be vulnerable because the level of security simply can't be guaranteed. Think of the lifespan of these devices. I'll use the iPhone as an example. iPhone 4, still see them out in the public today, but they're not being updated by Apple. So the security of that device definitely has been compromised. So you heard me mention earlier about security standards and the establishment of sound IT standards. It's really vitally important because there's so many IoT devices that collect so much information about us and about personal information about us or even business critical information. And really the IoT security standards today, it's a mixed bag. Standards exist today around networking and a variety of standards, that is. They exist around networking and data center and interoperability and different ways. They all apply differently and in different ways and affect these IoT devices. But luckily, the good news here is that these efforts are definitely moving and shifting towards a way to provide significantly better guidance at the international standard level, not relating specifically to IoT security. It's really almost guaranteed that, you know, when we look back on these efforts years from now, that, you know, certain high profile tragedies that we see today, if you will, the will be related to and named the early days of IoT. It could be humorous now, but it will be humorous looking back on it. But now it definitely is not humorous when we're talking about the security implications and the results of that. You know, there's a window that we talk about, the window that's changing. There's really a very short amount of time to build security into these devices, to maximize security and minimize risk. And that window, with the explosion of devices and the number of devices that we talked about, that window is getting smaller and smaller, and we need to begin to do something a little quicker. So I want to jump in and talk about, you know, what Intel Security is doing as a strategic charter around this. We have taken an approach to deliver a more sustainable security on varying devices and at a variety of business outcomes. The keystones of this strategy revolve around digital presence, risk comprehension, automation, integration, and consultation. You know, organizations are becoming increasingly borderless, as you heard me mention earlier in the presentation. Employees and applications and the services that they work with and around, the data, it's getting very hard to define any one individual perimeter. There's no single point of control any longer. It's becoming more and more blurred every day. And because of that, we really need to provide a pervasive protection across all of the vectors, including endpoint, network, gateway, cloud, mobile. It's getting more and more difficult, but something that needs to be focused on. Risk comprehension, really recognizing that organizations will and never can be 100% protected. We can analyze and correlate lots of data, for instance, but a broad set of the connected intelligence that we see from on-premise devices, servers, PCs, et cetera, and the cloud, we can begin to comprehend that risk and see some unusual activities that really can be quickly identified and separated from the proverbial noise. And moving towards an automation is really going to be key on that. Centralizing the visibility, the way we look at the data, and the control with automation of the lower value tasks that your security teams are doing, it really is going to help to dramatically optimize that same team when they're allowed to focus their time and efforts on higher value tasks other than simply chasing malware or chasing IOCs, indicators of compromise. And really what we're doing is, again, getting back to ultimately managing risk more effectively. I think an open integration fabric is necessary to bring together this threat data and the insights and technologies of systems that we've talked about over the past 30 minutes or so. Without having that shared threat intelligence and investigating the security incidents that we've talked about and responding to these attacks, it's a very manual process. And I mentioned earlier about data exchange layer and that instant communication and collaboration. We really need to make sure that we're doing that, and we have started and begun to do that, because we can't be great at everything. We're great at a lot of things, but it's hard for one company. I would say near impossible for one company to be great at everything, and therefore you need that ecosystem. We have an ecosystem of SIA partners, Strategic Innovation Alliance partners, that make use of our software development kits, DXL being one of those. Some of our recent entrants into our partnership is Checkpoint, Mobile Iron, Aruba, Rapid7, Proofpoint. These are some very widely recognized names. They're plugged into our DXL software development kits. They're taking part of that intelligence. And then lastly, bringing that all together is the consultative expertise, that way to bring all of this from theory into real life and basically transforming that security posture, the people, the process, the technology, you know, basically moving all of that that into a real life, and we really couldn't do that without services and incident response teams at the ready. So I want to talk about our threat defense lifecycle, which is our strategy, which is to apply the concepts that I've talked about thus far through integration and specifically automation into a lifecycle approach to security. So you probably haven't heard that before, but a lifecycle approach to security, and we're calling this the threat defense lifecycle. And in short, we're unifying the capabilities really that we have been mastering over the years around protection, detection, and correction. And through the use of those, we can help to reduce or even potentially avoid altogether risk, while at the same time optimizing those resources that we talked about earlier. The protect phase, it's a comprehensive protection that it stops the most pervasive attacks. You can think of this as the place where traditional antivirus would sit. It does a lot of things. It has a huge impact, but it does it at a very low cost. That detect phase, a little bit different. Advanced monitoring, identifying anomalous outlier behavior. Now we're able to perceive and identify a little bit lower threshold attacks and behaviors that would typically go unnoticed, especially by that phase prior, the protect phase. And then lastly, the correct phase. Now we're beginning to do some triage and respond to the prioritization of and the investigation of the prior phases. And then all of this simply adapts and continues to move in a cycle and applies an insight immediately through the use of and the collaboration of all three of these phases. So at the heart of our Intel security strategy lies this integrated platform that you've heard me talk about. It really does underpin the protect, detect, and correct strategy that I've been mentioning. In order to really achieve success, there is an ever-changing, well-educated adversary that requires thorough integration in order to fight them. And to achieve success, we need to be able to expand on these capabilities in a definite, more sustained way by, number one, minimizing the complexity and increasing the leverage that of the resources that we have. And it's critical that the platform is open. I think that's critical. It enables cross-vendor and in-house integration. So tools we build here at Intel Security to interact and integrate with tools that are created by completely other vendors, some of the ones that you heard me mention earlier. Because, again, no single vendor has all the answers. And in order to move us closer to be able to thwart more and more of these attacks going forward, it's going to take a combined approach. And this is that first step towards that. And no single vendor has all the answers, although I will tell you that some vendors definitely do think they have all the answers. And I do believe that this approach will help to deliver the outcomes that we have talked about so far. Intel Security has some of the most broad and most integrated security portfolio of any vendor, which includes endpoint security, network security, data protection, analytics, and security management. Going through the products in my mind here. We protect more than 180 million devices out there, PCs, servers, mobile, many IoT devices as well, both on-prem and in the cloud as well, public, private cloud, or a hybrid. Across data centers across the world, and we have a broad global threat intelligence. We actually refer to that as GTI, Global Threat Intelligence, which has 40 billion queries a day that provide instantaneous protection against more threats than any other vendor. And some organizations have opted to use that capability. Actually, 92% of the Fortune 100 enterprises and government agencies across the globe have opted to take part in that. So I want to close with one of the areas that I think is very important, which is the security standard. you know, you heard me mention it so far that, you know, Intel Security is one of the trusted, the most trusted security partners in the industry. And having security standards is really critical. And you can see on screen here on the left and the right that there's a number of other vendors that also believe the same thing. We can't do it alone, and we can't do it without standards. Intel, along with a handful of other vendors, you can see along the left-hand side there, has spearheaded the Industrial Internet Consortium and sits on the board of the Open Interconnect Consortium there on the right. So I hope that over the past 35, 40 minutes or so that I've been able to convey to you what we're doing at Intel Security to help to change the game. It requires an integrated platform, and it requires a broad threat defense lifecycle strategy, and in doing so, gives confidence to organizations, but I also wanted to give confidence to you about our strategy. Because by unifying capabilities both around the protection, detection, and correction that I mentioned, it really does help to reduce or avoid risk, and at the same time, optimizing your efforts in the security industry. And when you're able to do that, you're able to eventually get to a point where you can do more with what you have, while at the same time making sure that you're running in a most optimal state. So with that, I thank you for your time, and I'm going to pass it back over to Kurt to open up our Q&A.
Great. Thanks a lot, Mike. That's a lot of good information. We got some good questions. We are to the Q&A now, and I want to remind our audience that we have plenty of time, so feel free to take advantage of the expertise here and continue to ask those questions as we go. Mike, there's a question about key factors. What are the key factors which makes traditional cybersecurity mechanisms like firewalls inefficient against IoT attacks?
No, I wouldn't necessarily say that it makes them inefficient. I think that firewalls are a security technology that is legacy. It definitely is something that has been around for quite some time. But I don't think that would simply make it a moot point when it comes to enabling greater levels of security. We need to keep in mind that security means defense in depth. It means a layered approach. I'm going to use the automobile use case that we talked about earlier. You know, there is a lot of different technologies in securing an automobile. They're different than other security technologies or methods, if you will, that you would take for securing a PC or a server. There are some of the same, but by and large, the way you're doing that is a little bit different. So I don't think that I don't think a lot of the technologies that we've got today and the approaches to security obviate the need for a firewall. I definitely still think that firewall is important, but I think that there needs to be something additional. You know, firewalls are good at doing a handful of things. And we talked about that protect, detect, and correct phase. In that protect phase, there's a lot of things happening at a very low cost, both at a financial cost and also at a resource cost, a CPU cost. We're able to get rid of a lot of the low-hanging fruit, right? The threats that are out there. There's, you heard me say, millions of threats out there. Well, those millions of threats aren't making it to our endpoints today. Not all of them. Some of them are. But the reason that all of them aren't are because of that protect phase. The traditional antivirus does a great deal of things by cleaning prior to data arriving at the endpoint. But at the same time, a firewall is doing the same thing. So it's doing a job, and it's doing it effectively, and I think more importantly, it's doing it efficiently. So I don't think it obviates the need for a firewall. I just think that there needs to be additional devices that sit behind that firewall as well.
Right, and if you look at the IoT architecture itself, where you have, you know, a variety of sensors, then you may have a gateway, then you may have cloud applications, and you may have end-user devices connected to the cloud to get analytics or get information from the sensors. I guess there's additional threat vectors that really firewalls don't address, right? The spoofing a sensor or getting unauthorized access, those kinds of things.
Authentication is definitely going to be key for a lot of that. You know, making sure that the identity of one device connecting to another one is actually the device that it says that it is. I was sitting with an organization a number of years ago, and they had wanted to secure their security cameras because they were getting a lot of man-in-the-middle attacks. They would be devices inserted that would spoof the identity of the server, the control server, that would be able to get access to those cameras. And they were able to resolve that issue by employing some authentication measures. So, yeah, absolutely, Kurt, I completely agree.
Right, and there was another question on the, on authentication, so that was very timely. So there are are there specific people in the ecosystem that specialize in that kind of thing, or
we
authentication?
Have, yeah, there's a lot of partners that we have. Intel, obviously, a very big company, and as you heard me mention before, we can't do everything, and I think we've recognized that. But yet, at the same time, want to try to maximize the security of organizations across the board. So thus my mention of that Security Innovation Alliance. There's, I mentioned over 150, but I believe the count is actually closer to 200 Strategic Innovation Alliance partners that we are partnering with them to basically ensure that we're not overlooking something, that if there's something that we simply don't do, we aren't in that arena, there has got to be a security vendor out there that does, and that does it a heck of a lot better. And so let's partner. Let's operate under the guise of standards and focus on thwarting those attacks and those bad guys. So absolutely.
Right. Okay. There are a trio of questions here about the platform itself. They're asking, is this a cloud platform? How can I get access to it for maybe prototyping and experimentation? And where can they get details?
Absolutely. So it will eventually be cloud-based. We are definitely moving that direction. We want to try to get a lot of success in an on-prem instance first. And this architecture is actually built on MQTT standards, and we have recognized that in order to make it as open as possible, we needed to be on an open standard. Now, it's on an open standard, but access to this SDK is somewhat controlled, and it really has to be somewhat controlled because we need to make sure, again, getting and applying those standards that I've been talking about so far, making sure that those that want to publish to the data exchange layer and also subscribe to it to get rich data from it are doing so in a manner that that will be effective for all of those that are doing the same exact thing, to publish and subscribe. So the eventual goal is to make it as available as possible. We have done a great job of doing that through our ePolicy Orchestrator SDK. For those who don't know ePolicy Orchestrator, that's our management console. Those SIA partners that I mentioned earlier, those 200, a lot of those have built-in extensions into our management console. Our management console manages millions of endpoints across the globe, and why would a security vendor not want to be a part of that? And so we've made that EPO software development kit available to them and have been very successful at doing that over the past 10 years. We're doing the same exact thing with our DXL software development kit. We have a handful of vendors now, those five that I mentioned. There's about 15 others that are in the works that we should be able to publicize here by the end of the year. But getting more information, intelsecurity.com/SIA. That's the best place to do it.
Great. Who are some of the customers that are deploying Intel security technologies that you can talk about?
Oh, gosh, there's definitely a lot. We have a lot of customers across varying segments, financial, critical infrastructure, medical, networking. Some of the ones that come to mind, NCR, for instance. NCR, a very big customer of ours, they've been using our technologies to secure their ATMs for well over 10 years. They use a variety of our technologies. In the medical and critical infrastructure space, Siemens. Another one that uses a lot of our technologies to secure a lot of their platforms. There's been some instances in the past where a lot of these the PCS7 devices of Siemens were targeted, and they've taken great steps to be able to move to securing those to prevent attacks going forward. Another recent entrant, is Kiosk. Kiosk is a new vendor, a new partnership of ours, where they have aggressively taken approaches to securing their devices across the board, utilizing whitelisting technologies, traditional antivirus technologies, encryption technologies. There's a plethora of tools that they're using to secure their devices going forward. And there's a bunch of others I could ramble on.
All right, great. Every company is talking about securing the Internet of Things, it seems. So what kinds of things sets apart Intel Security?
I think the biggest thing that sets Intel Security apart is the first word in that, which is Intel. You know, Intel has been a master at creating standards. I think the most ubiquitous that we all use today, USB. I think every single one of us knows and has a multitude of USB-enabled devices. USB was a serial bus that was created years and years ago by Intel, and they brought that to market and simply made it a standard. So that's key. Again, I keep going back to these standards. We are doing a great job at employing security. A lot of other vendors are doing a great job at employing security. But what I think sets us apart is that we've got behind the security business unit of our function and our approach is Intel. And it really does provide a way for us to build in capabilities into the hardware, to be able to interact more with the hardware side of the Intel business. To build out and be laser focused on those standards.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Excuse me.
How about any? I'm not sure about. I have a feeling what the answer to this is, but can you share any info on good tools and sources for simulating IoT specific attacks and analyzing them, like IoT simulators that maybe simulate sensors or producers or consumers, test benches, those kinds of things.
There's a lot of tools available, and I wouldn't be able to provide any one particular tool set to be able to do that testing. I'm just simply not close enough to that. We have a large number of team members that probably could answer that question, so that might have to be one for a follow-up. But it's good to hear that question is being asked, because one of the key areas around employing security on devices is QA, to make sure that the impacts of security on that device don't severely impact the core function of that device in the first place. And so one of the ones in which obviously the ways you can do that is through measures of testing. So although I can't directly answer the question for you, I'm number one glad to hear that people are interested in employing testing infrastructures. But I think that there's probably others that unfortunately are not on the call now that could answer that question a little better. But appreciate the question being asked.
Sure. And again, feel free to reach out to Intel Security to ask more detailed questions and find out more as well. There's a question about if you can't get the attack before it hits the OS, what kind of state can the security be in? I think this is kind of an embedded developer point of view where lots of times attacks are done on the OS, I guess even in the enterprise. So are there layers that you put in to prevent it from getting to the OS, I suppose like firewalls, but then you're also talking about threat prevention techniques within the OS itself, within the applications that are written in it, within the middleware. Are all these things being addressed in the Intel Security platform?
Absolutely. If you can think back to the prior slide where I drew out a little bit of the architecture, the endpoint is really it's not the perimeter. It is thought of as being the new perimeter, but at the same time, there's a lot of technologies that are employed prior to a piece of malware reaching the endpoint. Now, the endpoint is, it's your last-ditch effort, if you will, but I think it's only the last-ditch effort because there are a lot of malware out there that are moving along and going undetected. But there's, if you employ strategies, for instance, at the gateway level, let's be specific to web browsing, for instance. You can utilize a web gateway. We have a web gateway. Numerous others have one as well. But if you're able to reduce the amount of malformed traffic and attachments and just malware in general at the gateway level prior to it getting to the endpoint, then your endpoint is going to be operating in a more optimized state. I think if we go back to that use case of the home, you know, one of the things that we are focusing on at the consumer level is the enablement of a smart home gateway, and it's the same premise, right? The endpoint in all of our homes is our laptops, PCs, the kids' tablets, the TVs even. Those are the new endpoints in the home, and that gateway, which today, as you heard me mention earlier, blindly sends traffic back and forth. Well, there is a lot more computing and analyzing that can be done at that level. And we're working with a number of other vendors in the space, but we are spearheading creating that smart home gateway where we're able to employ some of those technologies that you're referring to at that level. Because, again, it takes a defense in-depth approach. You can't simply rely on your endpoint. I've talked with a lot of customers on both the OT and the IT side where they are relying too much on their endpoint and they are seeing pains because of it. So employing a great endpoint strategy is fantastic, but it really needs to go hand in hand with a great network strategy by utilization of web gateways and firewalls, Kurt, as you mentioned as well.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. So you mentioned Sticks and Cybox early on in your presentation, and I have heard of the group is Oasis that's kind of defining these standards and cyber observables and things like that. And I believe Sticks is the method for communication, and there's repositories for sharing and communicating these cyber observables. Is that the idea, and how does the Intel security platform kind of fold into that kind of environment, or does it?
You know, I think that it does, and we're utilizing these standards and these protocols. And what jumps out right away is our SIM, our Security Information and Event Management System, by being able to make use of the protocol that's being used today for cyber threat intelligence, and to be able to make that more easily consumed. Again, we talked about gateways, we talked about the endpoint, and it could be an IT or an OT use case, but you know, being able to make use of that, the information that is shared via that Sticks and Taxi protocol is going to enable organizations to be much more nimble. Right? So if your Security Information and Event Management, your SIM tool, can consume and digest IOCs or indicators of compromise that much quicker and easier because of this standardized protocol, then as a result, you're going to be able to see those indicators of compromise in your environment much sooner, right? So if you think about the cyber kill chain, a part of that kill chain is to move from a detection state of realizing that you have been you've been hacked or compromised to remediation. And that step typically takes a very, very long time, that detection part, realizing that you have been compromised. A lot of organizations don't even know in a matter of weeks or months that they are operating in a compromised state. And being able to digest information via these standards enables them to get from that compromised state to a remediated state much, much quicker. So in the end, we want to operate an effective protocol for remediation, but we need to do that in an optimized manner, right? So security teams are only so large. Security professionals today, they're very, very high demand. Over the course of the next few years, I'm not sure if anybody attended RSA, but Chris Young was mentioning that we had a lot of there's a lot of need for professionals in the security industry, and that there's about a 4 to 5 million person gap for where the need is versus where people will be in terms of being able to do that work. So being able to do more with less, and that simply means the number of people that you have doing this work, is simply going to require you to be able to operate in a much more high-speed, efficient manner. And being able to consume data in these, utilizing these standards and protocols is definitely a key to that.
Right. Yeah, and the way I understand OASIS, it's really modeled after something Intel Security pioneered with desktop virus prevention, right, where you go off and when you're trying to download something, you go to a repository and say, hey, how safe is this? And there's a security index and all that kind of thing. This cyber observables initiative is very much patterned after that kind of a paradigm.
Very true. Absolutely. We put a lot of that technology into our tool sets as well, being able to make use of that, because a lot of reputation around URLs and IPs and checksums, you can prevent a lot of attacks by simply having knowledge about what happened on the other side of the planet hours and hours before. So it's a follow the sun model that we
right.
follow.
Exactly, and it makes a lot of sense for a comprehensive strategy, especially for IoT.
Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned at the very beginning about needing to know your TV's operating system version, et cetera. So the logical question to that is, how sophisticated will users need to be or become in terms of education on exactly what their appliances are doing and in order to have adequate threat protection? Or do you think a lot of this can be kind of hidden from the end user, or are they going to have some amount of knowledge in terms of, you know, mitigating or identifying potential attacks?
As much as I would want to say that we need to all be cognizant of the operating system that our refrigerator is running and that our TV is running, I think that's probably a pipe dream. Putting that in the hands of the consumer is probably a little bit too much to ask, and I think that's one of the reasons why we're pushing this standard and why we're wanting folks to jump on our data exchange layer strategy, simply to be able to make sure that if these devices, connected as they are connecting back to the gateway in your home, for instance, if that gateway can have intelligence to tell you information about the devices that are connected, if it could look into the devices, that would be obviously the ultimate way to get information and intelligence about them. But I think we're a little ways off from getting to that point. I still think that it puts a lot of pressure on the vendors themselves to provide secure products to the market. They simply can't be relying on the consumers, and I think too much of that reliance has been put down on the consumers from both a B2B and a B2C manner, where OEMs are relying on their customers to provide that security. And
yeah.
I think really is on the – we need to pressure the OEMs to be able – and the vendors to put security, be top of mind when those products are being created.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to thank Michael for sharing his insights on IoT and protecting the connected. We at Open Systems Media and Intel Security want to thank you, the audience, for attending today and contributing those excellent questions remotely. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast version will also be made available there. Thank you for attending, and have a great day.